Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian, regardless of which languages you know or don't know, as long as you can understand us. And even if you don't, that doesn't matter. We are thrilled that you're joining us for the 77th episode of the Calcio Land Podcast. So tonight we have a fun episode. We're going to get into some predictions for the Serie A matches. Finally, the league is coming back. We're going to get into some transfers, especially some near and dear to our great friend and producer, Alex Goldberg. And we're going to wrap it up with a fantastic interview with our dear friend, Richard Hall from the Gentleman Ultra site. So, Alex, people love your rants. On Wednesday, we had our friends from Italian Football Daily that took over the whole episode. So I know you have some hot takes for us this morning. The Sanchez move isn't quite official, but Wenger pretty much let the cat out of the bag. At this point, it's just a matter of time until Man United welcome Alexis Sanchez. So you gave us, I asked you last time, Alex, between Manchester City, Man United, where you wanted to see him go. Now that we know it's United, what's your reaction on the transfer?
Bravo, Alexi. Bravo. You chose the dysfunctional club, at least in the now. You chose a manager that doesn't care about you, doesn't care about your feelings. He'll play you as long as you scratch his back more than he scratches yours. It could work, David, for weeks on end. Maybe they'll look great. Maybe Lukaku will be scoring goals. Alexi will be scoring and assisting. Paul Pogba, who, in my opinion, is still the most important player in Manchester United. I think that really is undeniable. When Pogba's at his best,
for sure,
that's when Man U is going to be the team that they should be. Alexis Sanchez is an amazing player, and he really showed us that on Arsenal. When he left Barcelona, we knew he had a lot of talent, but he got that famous Barca reject tag, and I put that in quotes. This is all about Jose Mourinho. It's always about Jose Mourinho. They're not going to beat Manchester City this year. Fast forward to next year. I still think you give Manchester United a whole summer again with all of these characters and another summer of transfer rumors, they'll find a way to mess this up. Now, I don't feel very good about my squad, Chelsea, so I'm not exactly saying that Chelsea is going to be ahead of Manchester United next year. But what is Man U going to do to leapfrog Manchester City? Right now, David, when I look at Man U's squad with Alexis Sanchez, I mean, they have way more talent on paper than a Chelsea, even a Liverpool. Liverpool looks great and cohesive, but just on paper, they got a crap load of talent. But there's too much dysfunction. They have too many characters. I don't see the chemistry gelling. I'm so glad if he had to pick one. Once again, I don't know why he had to pick one. Once upon a time, there was a rumor that he wanted to go to a London club. That really didn't work out. But nonetheless, I am banking on Jose Mourinho screwing all of this up. I understand if you look back at my own tweets, I love Jose Mourinho because he did great with Chelsea. But he's losing it, David. He's losing it. He's not the special one anymore. So I'm thrilled that Alexi at least is not going to Manchester City. That's how I feel about it. I'm exhausted from the Alexis Sanchez stuff, but I can't imagine how exhausted you are. So, David, what was it like to cover all this?
Okay, so before we get into the experience itself, you know, those that are familiar with my work and the podcast, I always like to say, you know, I decided to join Di Marzio staff, and it was my idea to have the English page. At first, they were like, nobody's going to want to read this stuff in English, and I kept telling them, listen to me, it's going to be a huge success. People are dying to get accurate transfer news, and Gianluca's the man. So I'm really not a reporter. On a very rare occasion do I do reporting. Working with Gianluca, I've gotten to know a lot of guys. You know, I had some reports on the Salah deal. I had something on Dani Alves leaving Juve last year. You know, I've had reports on Gilardino in the past, but I'm really not a reporter. Like, the way I'm thrilled to give Gianluca a big platform. He's a great guy, deserves all the success that he has. Selfishly for me, I use that platform because I know a lot of people, you know, follow me to get Gianluca's news. And the news and the hope is that then people check out my work, and I'm very grateful that they do. You know, a lot of people listen to our podcast to hear our transfer analysis. A lot of people read my articles on ESPN and Calcio Mercato because I work with Gianluca. So credit where it's due. When people say, oh, thank you, David, thank you for being so accurate on Alexis Sanchez, I had nothing to do with that. But what I'll tell you is that it's very, very stressful when there's these big stories. Like, I remember last Thursday, I was getting ready to go to my day job, and all of a sudden, I got a ping saying, big news coming, get ready. And then the Alexis Sanchez one, so we did the update. A lot of people thought, oh, this is bullshit. This is just to drive up the price. What is DiMarzio talking about? This is all bullshit. So, of course, you know, it's not official yet, but that deal's pretty much done. And it's just very stressful because you're on pins and needles, always waiting for the update. I want to give a huge shout out to my staff, Claudio, Zeke, Paolo, Fabio, our new addition, Gabriele, who's fantastic. They've done great work, you know, always rotating to be on call for that. So it was very stressful. I'm very excited that it went well. My only request, you know, for Premier League fans or any fans in general, you know, don't just be such prisoners of the moment. I see everyone now, the Man United fans, want to rename Old Trafford for DiMarzio like they did 2 summers ago when he nailed everything. Last summer, he didn't have much news on Man United. I keep reading these things that he was wrong on Man United, although we never reported something that didn't happen. And, you know, now he's the flavor of the month again. So try not to be such prisoners of the moment. Gianluca's a fantastic reporter. He just doesn't cover the PL full time. So that's my spiel on that. It was definitely a very exciting transfer story. But we like those that happen quickly as opposed to prolonged for a week. Because for us that have to update this, the website, it can be pretty stressful. So before we get into some more transfer stuff with the questions that you guys sent in, we finally have Serie A coming back after a little break. So I had our dear friend Thousand Names in Italy give us some game predictions. There are actually some very intriguing games this weekend. So as usual, our dear friend Thousand sent me 3 picks. I'm going to read them both in English and Italian. Some people in Italy tune in to hear what Thousands has to say. I'll also give you my picks, and then I'll tell you about a few other games coming up. So we have the first match that Thousand picked is Inter versus Roma. We've talked a lot about them on the podcast. Both teams had their big collapse before the break, so intriguingly, they face each other at San Siro. All the games, by the way, are going to be on Sunday in Italy. So Thousand thinks that Inter is going to win 1-0, with a goal by Icardi. His comment is that Spalletti proves that his team just needs minor tweaks on the transfer market. He says Eusebio Di Francesco Lux runs out, and Zecco goes back to being the bust he was 2 years ago when he arrived in Serie A. So in Italian, Inter Roma 1-0, Icardi, Spalletti dimostra che la squadra ha bisogno solo di qualche ritocco, finito il culo di Eusebio, Zecco tornato il bidone di 2 anni fa. I actually think it's going to be a draw. I think both teams have really been kind of in a slump. A draw doesn't really help either team, but it also doesn't really hurt them with Lazio coming. So I predict it's going to be a draw. Our friend Thousand has Inter. Next match that Thousand picked is Milan's traveling to face Cagliari. Thousand Names thinks Cagliari is going to win 2-0 with goals by Pavoletti and Paduin. His comment is Milan's new owners also get embarrassed in Sardinia, beautiful island, you know, separate from continental Italy. And he has a political statement how on March 4th, I think that's the day of the election in Italy, Silvio Berlusconi is going to be back running the country, and he wonders if Berlusconi is going to buy back Milan as well. If you've listened to some of our podcasts on Milan, maybe Thousands has as well. In Italian, Cagliari Milan 2-0, Pavoletti Paduin, Young Horn Lee preso a pesci in faccia pure dei pecorari sardi, 4 marzo l'Italia aspetta il ritorno di Silvio, si ricompra i rossoneri, punto di domanda. I actually think this is going to be a draw. I think Milan's going to show a little bit more. Gattuso's had more time with the players, so I'm going to have this as a draw. Last match that Thousand picks, and I actually think this is the match of the weekend, even more than Inter-Roma, is Atalanta-Napoli. Thousand Names has Napoli winning 1-0 and Bergamo with a goal by Insigne. He says Sarri is going to get his revenge for the elimination in the Coppa Italia. He wonders, is Verdi going to watch what he missed by not going to Napoli, and he says Gasperini's overrated players fail when it matters most. So the reason why I find this match so intriguing is, of course, Napoli's at the top of the standings, but Atalanta really have their number. Actually, Atalanta have won 3 of the last 4 matches they played against Napoli. Gasperini really seems to have figured out how to neutralize Sarri's squad. I'm a little bit, as much as I'd like to see Napoli win, I have this as a draw. I think it's going to be 1-1. I'm going to read the comment in Italian from Thousand. Atalanta-Napoli 0-1. Insigne, Sarri si prende la rivincita in Coppa Italia. Verdi, cosa ti sei perso? I bidoni di Gasperini falliscono ancora quando conta. So, to recap, Thousand has Inter Roma 1-0. I have it as a draw. Cagliari-Milan, Thousand has it as 2-0. I have it as a draw. And Atalanta-Napoli, he has Napoli winning. I have it as a draw. So totally different picks. I guess I went with the more diplomatic route with just draws. Now, a couple of other matches I want to bring to your attention. Juve plays at home against Genoa. It's a tough match for Napoli, so maybe Juve will find themselves at the top of the standing. Lazio, who's really on such a roll, they play at home against Chievo. And another intriguing match to watch is Sampdoria and Fiorentina. Both of them are contenders for the Europa League. So I'm very excited to have Serie A back. So now with the Twitter questions, not surprisingly, we have a lot of transfer questions. Alex didn't pick these. I did, but there are some good ones on Chelsea. So which ones are we going to go over tonight, Alex?
All right, David, this is fun for me. What can you tell us about Chelsea transfer target Emerson Palmieri?
So this story came out a few days ago on Roma being linked to Emerson Palmieri. So, you know, I got a lot of crap on Twitter for my description of Zappacosta. A lot of people were saying that I've been saying the same thing on Emerson Palmieri. I disagree. But in any event, I'll give you, before I tell you what I think about him, let's just go with some facts. This is a player that's been linked to both Juve and Liverpool on Di Marzio's site, so a reliable source. Juve, of course, knows very well the Italian market. Had Alessandro left, Emerson Palmieri was going to be Juve's first choice to replace him. Liverpool, of course, has shopped quite a bit in Italy. They got Salah from Roma. They were interested in Emerson Palmieri right before he tore his ACL. Last year, and Palmieri made it all the way to the Italian national team. He's a Brazilian descent, but had an Italian passport, played for the Azzurri. So, you know, he had a breakout season. This isn't just my opinion. These are facts. The things he does have in common with Zappacosta is really just one, pace. He's a good runner, pretty fast. Compared to Zappacosta, though, he's a much better dribbler. I'd say he's better at crossing. He's really more of an offensive-minded wing back. I don't think he's better than Marcos Alonso, but I'm going to be honest. I rate Marcos Alonso higher than most people, but I think he could be a very intriguing alternative to him. I think this could be a pretty intriguing move for Chelsea. I think he's very available in the sense that Roma has Kolarov, who's been fantastic for them. Palmieri plays the same role. They could make a lot more money selling Palmieri than Kolarov. So I think there's a pretty decent chance that this deal happens.
Hey, he's 23, and I rate Marcos Alonso higher than most Chelsea fans as well, but I think competition is very healthy, so I would welcome that to Chelsea. Well, David, let's just stay on Chelsea. Are they also interested in his teammate, Edin Dzeko?
So, perfect timing. While we're recording this, my colleagues on Di Marzio's staff are doing the updates, and tonight we did have one, how it's not at just Emerson Palmieri. Chelsea is also interested in Edin Dzeko. And, you know, interestingly, just a few days ago, both in my column on Calciomercato and on our podcast, I wondered if Roma should just blow it up and go with their young players. Of course, they invested a lot in Patrick Schick. Him and Dzeko really, one excludes the other, in my opinion. Those are two central strikers, very hard to play them together. To me, it would make sense for Roma to go all in with Schick, who was their most expensive incoming transfer in history. Now, I'm a big fan of Dzeko. I think he's a very good player. I think he's the type of guy you can't just rate on goals alone. I think he'd fit really well for Conte. So the report tonight is that Chelsea is interested in acquiring both Palmieri and Edin Dzeko. They'd be willing to spend $50 million plus the loan of Batshuayi to get this deal done, I think Roma should consider it. Granted, it's a big gamble to lose, especially your best striker. You know, they made it past the round in the Champions League. They're trying to fight to finish in top four and qualify for next season's Champions League. So it's a gamble. But if they want to go all in with Schick, this wouldn't be the craziest thing to do. So let's say Batshuayi doesn't go to Roma in the deal because Sevilla is also interested. Roma could be looking at Daniel Sturridge from Liverpool. But again, I think if Dzeko goes, it means they're really focusing on Schick.
Couple quick takeaways. I'd always invite having two Edins on the team. Edin Dzeko scored a masterful goal in the Champions League against Chelsea. But most importantly, it's not Andy Carroll. Moving on, David. What did you make of Simone Verdi?
Or Peter Crouch.
I'm going to try out for striker. David, what did you make of Simone Verdi turning down Napoli's offer?
So I'm going to write about this more next week for Calciomercato. It's really a fascinating topic. So a couple of thoughts. First off, I think the fact that Simone Verdi, who's going to turn 26 in July, so not the youngest guy, is passing up a chance to join Napoli, who right now is in the top of the standings in Serie A, would be an absolutely historic Scudetto. The fact that he turned down a chance to be potentially on a team that's going to be really historic if they can win it. Potentially this season, sure, probably be on the bench, but maybe Napoli's looking for a replacement for Callejon, who's going to be 31. I think he turned down a big opportunity, but I wonder if the reason he turned it down is because we know that Sarri just doesn't rotate and doesn't especially trust new guys. Now, Verdi briefly played for Sarri previously in his career. Maybe something there happened. So this is a very intriguing decision on his part not to join Napoli. So on one hand, you can say he passed on a chance to join a potentially historic team, but maybe this is really Sarri's fault too, because potential new acquisitions for Napoli are going to say, you know, why am I going to go there if I'm not going to play? You know, if I wanted to be really nasty, I would say, you know, had Italy qualified for the World Cup, you know, Verdi could say, hey, I'm trying to make the World Cup team, so I need to stay at a team where I'm playing, but that's not even an option this time. Sorry, I had to sneak that in.
I like it. All right, David, staying on Napoli, why is Napoli making all these minor moves on players no one's ever heard of?
So it was funny because yesterday we had a report on the Marzio site where at first, and this is inside baseball, we didn't even know who the player was. The report was that Napoli had booked a medical at the Villa Stuart Clinic in Rome, where pretty much all the teams send their players, unless you're Juve, Milan, or Inter, to do their medical. So it was this Brazilian player on a last place team in the Portuguese league. And, you know, a lot of people, and then they signed this guy from the French league nobody had heard of. So people are like, what is Napoli doing? How are they competing with Juve with this? Juve has Bernardeschi, players like that on the bench. What is Napoli doing? But actually, Napoli's starting to think like a big club with these moves. Think about how many players Juve and even your team Chelsea owns. They own all these players that aren't necessarily ever going to be on the team. And, you know, why do clubs do these? A, there's opportunities to maybe make a profit, especially if you can sign a player on a free transfer. A lot of times you're also doing a favor to an agent. Interestingly, this Brazilian player that Napoli gave a medical to that was from the second division in Portugal, you know who his agent is? It's Jorge Mendes, the same agent who recently negotiated Goulam's extension with Napoli. So sometimes it's scratch your back, I'll scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. So, you know, they do synergies, try to ingrain themselves with agents. So in a way, you can mock Napoli, but I actually think Napoli's starting to think like a big club. These are things that Juve does constantly.
Okay. All right, David, why isn't Ramirez already on Inter since Suning also owns his Chinese club?
This is actually an intriguing question. I've been thinking a lot about this because you'd think this is a no-brainer. You know, he's playing in China on Capello's team. Inter really needs a midfielder. He'd probably be much more intrigued by playing in Serie A than over in China. I don't have a great answer aside from the fact that his wages are sky high. I think he earns $10 million a season, so he'd earn more than Icardi at Inter, considerably more. So maybe Inter's trying to see if there's some wiggle room to lower his wages or maybe get the Chinese club to pay it. So I don't have a great answer. It's a very good question. I'll research it a little bit more, but right now my guess is this is related to wages.
All right, staying on Inter, which player is Inter more likely to get back for João Mário if they can complete a loan swap deal like they did with Condogbia?
So I got to give a, you know, Inter sporting director Ausilio gets a lot of crap, but I'll say that he has actually been rather creative. Inter was one of the first clubs to do these two-year loan deals with options to buy. They do this to kind of get around financial fair play, to kind of kick the can down the road and improve the team and whatnot. And last summer, he kind of came up with these loan swap deals, even outside of Italy, Condogbia and Cancelo. So Inter's really quite creative. So there were a lot of reports on Inter potentially doing this with João Mário. They were linked to Gaetan at Atletico Madrid. The problem with that is if they bring in Ramirez, he'd take up their last EU slot, so they would have to then flip João Mário for a player with an EU passport. But the most recent news is that West Ham is also interested in João Mário on a loan with option to buy a deal. And João Mário wasn't interested at first, but now he's warming up to the destination. So maybe Inter won't be able to get a player back for him, but if they could get João Mário off their books next season, that would be a very good development too.
Ooh, I feel like we've talked about João Mário quite a bit and not much happening with him. All right, David, let's move to the old lady. Given Marquisio's recent struggles to find playing time, would his best option be to leave Juve?
What perfect timing. Exactly now as we're recording it, it's midnight and 1 minute in Italy. This is when Marquisio's officially turning 31. He follows me on Twitter. I doubt he's listening, but if you are, Claudio, tanti auguri, buon compleanno. So here's the deal with Marquisio, right? Juve has Pjanic. He's really the leader of the midfield. We know how much Max Allegri loves Khedira. A lot of Juve fans wonder why. So those two guys are ahead of him. And then Matuidi has been really a revelation at Juve. Then, of course, there's Bentancur, who's been really, really impressive. It seems almost certain that Juve is going to sign Emre Can. We've also seen them link to midfielders at Sampdoria, especially Payet. A lot of Juve fans would love to have Milinkovic-Savic. I don't know how realistic that is. Juve's been also linked to Brian Cristante at Atalanta, so a lot of midfielders. So already Marquisio is struggling to find playing time, and it doesn't sound like it's going to get much better at Juve. There's been interest in MLS. I know he's pretty open to that destination. I'm just not sure if he's ready to do it quite yet. And here's the problem. He's under, not a problem, but a factor. He's under contract with Juve until 2020. He earns $4 million, and when I say he earns $4 million, that is after taxes in euros, so equivalent in MLS is about $8 million because in MLS they report wages before taxes. So he'd have to, a club would have to really make him a big offer. He'd leave some money on the table, but he's owed a lot from Juve. So an interesting situation. I could see Marquisio in MLS. I think 2018, though, might be at least 1 year too soon.
Claudio, if you are listening, Foxborough, Massachusetts is a beautiful city. Okay, no, it's not. Moving on. Why did Cicciaretti leave Benevento to go play in Serie B at Parma?
So this is another very intriguing move. So Cicciaretti is actually a player. When Dre Cordero was on, he gave him a huge shout-out. I know even our friend Matteo Bonetti, I was talking to him today. He really likes him as well. So there's a lot of that is a very puzzling move. So Cicciaretti has an expiring contract. He's going to go to Napoli at the end of the season. So Benevento's been very active in the transfer window this January. So you're like, oh, it seems they're making a push to avoid relegation. So why aren't they just keeping their best player? And he's going to Parma. And I think, though, this is a strictly off-the-field issue. He's clashed with both managers of Benevento. There seems to be issues with his lack of motivation in training. So maybe even Napoli told him, you know what, you need a different environment. Kind of a surprising move that he would go to Parma and Serie B. But maybe that's a good place for him to kind of chill out until he joins Napoli in the summer.
All right. He had a brace on Tuesday. Should Milan bring back Mario Balotelli?
You know, I'd love that. I love Super Mario. I have a lot of affection for him. And when you look at Milan strikers, he'd probably be an upgrade. And granted, he's already been on Milan twice. I think he'd be give him a big boost. But, you know, the problem is here, look, you know, a lot of Milan fans are very upset with Raiola because of the Donnarumma situation. So I'm not sure if you'd want another Raiola client back at Milan. But aside from that, to me, that seems like a no-brainer. If it could happen, that'd be wonderful. I don't have any reports on that quite yet. But, you know, if it did happen, I'd be happy. I just think, you know, Milan fans would just need to be aware that, you'd have more Raiola in your life.
All right, well, kind of staying on the same subject, why doesn't Andre Silva get more playing time?
It's a good question. You know, Andre Silva came with a lot of hype. He seems to have done – he did very well in the Europa League, came with a big pedigree. I think he's a starter on the Portuguese national team. But, look, you know, it's always very hard to adapt to Serie A for any player, especially a young player like that. I will so say that it's a big strike against them that Montella didn't play him much. You know, granted, Montella really liked Kalinic. A lot of people thought once Montella would leave that Gattuso would just play Andre Silva. He hasn't, and it sounds like Kalinic will probably start the match against Cagliari. And then there's the other player, and we're going to talk about him with our friend Richard Hall, is Cutrone, who I think has been really good. So, you know, if two managers so far haven't played Andre Silva, maybe he's not impressing them in training. We've seen he wouldn't be the first striker to struggle to adapt to Serie A. There's been some offers from him from China, even in England. Maybe not. Maybe if they see that Gattuso's not going to trust them, maybe the best thing for Milan is to cut their losses and sell him.
All right, last Twitter question, David. Why doesn't Hector Moreno get more playing time at Roma, and why don't we see more Mexican players in Serie A?
Very good question. So I will say for Roma, probably their best and deepest position is center back, where happens Moreno to play. Of course, they have Costas Manolas, who they gave an extension to. Fazio has been an absolute revelation for them since he arrived from Spurs, so those guys are ahead of him. Even Juan Jesus has had his moments for Roma, so the best answer I can give you is there's just a lot of competition ahead of them. What also hurts them is that Roma's manager, Di Francesco, is really known for the four-man defense. He's not someone that once in a while will play with three center backs, which could open up more playing time for Moreno. So I think it's just a matter that the guys ahead of him are more established in Serie A, and the manager only uses two at a time. As far as why there aren't more Mexican players in Serie A, that's a great question. I really had never thought of it. I try not to think about it so much in terms of nationalities, but I see what the listener is saying. So I'll research this a little bit more, but for Moreno specifically, that's why I think he's not playing. So we didn't have any pop culture questions, and that was by design today, because we're going to have a special episode running over the weekend. We have a fantastic interview with Brian Hyatt from Rolling Stone. There's going to be no calcio talk there, so I'm warning you right now, but if you're into music and journalism, check it out over the weekend. I think you'll love it. But we do have a great interview that's almost completely related to calcio and a little bit on journalism. We have our dear friend Richard Hall, who runs the outstanding Gentleman Ultra site. I constantly check out the articles there, and Richard has great insight in Serie A, so I'm sure you'll enjoy it. And this is my pitch to you guys. We've done a lot of episodes. Alex and I are always bringing it. We try to involve you guys a lot. So we really could use your support. We need your help for the podcast to grow. We're constantly booking great guests. We put a lot of effort into it. The podcast is free. We're not going to change that, but we really can use your support. So if you like what you hear, please tell a friend, retweet us. If you're on Android, please subscribe on SoundCloud. That goes a long way. If you're on iTunes, and most of our listeners are, please leave us a review. It literally takes 2 seconds. Give us a 5-star review. If you want to leave a comment, I can assure you Alex and I read them all. We really, really appreciate it. We have over 110 5-star reviews, which we're really proud of. We'd love to get to at least 200 by the summer. So please help us with that. We really appreciate your support. For the interview segment of the podcast tonight, we are joined by another fantastic guest. We are quite on a roll in 2018. So today we are joined by my very good friend, Richard Hall, who is the creator of the outstanding Gentleman Ultra site. We'll get into what you can read there towards the end of the interview. He also covers Italian football for many top sites like BT Sport, ESPN FC. You've read him on Guardian Sport, Football Italia, Calcio Mercato's English page, The Sportman. He's also an analyst on SiriusXM here in the United States. And soon he'll also be contributing player profiles on Di Marzio site, which I'm really excited for. So, Richard, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for joining us on Calcioland.
No problems, guys. Always good to be back on this, and a wonderful show. And yeah, just happy to be back.
Great. So, Richard, let's start with the teams that are especially near and dear to you. You travel often to the city of Milano, and for a while it looked like there was a resurgence with the two teams there. I think both you and I have been really waiting for that to happen. We know what a big impact that would have for Italian football as a whole. And I have to say, you know, Inter for a while had shown that they really seemed to be doing very well under new manager Luciano Spalletti. Then came the match against Pordenone in the Coppa Italia right after that great draw in Turin against Juventus. So the team simply hasn't been the same since then. So I wanted to get your take on Inter. Is this an annual collapse and maybe we overrated the team, or do you think Luciano Spalletti will be able to right the ship and bring them back to at least the Champions League spot?
It's a good question, a difficult one. I mean, the mood in Milan had shifted. I remember going to the derby in 2015, and it was almost like, I mean, the choreography was fantastic. It was almost like it was the last hurrah of these Milan teams. It's almost a statement of we're still here, because they were both in the doldrums so much that season. And then going back and being in Milan early this season, the whole city had changed. It was almost like there's a feeling that both teams were back, you know, with the money, the Far Eastern investment. Inter's project very different, a bit longer down the line. Milan's was smack bang at the start of it. And, you know, I mean, they got 60,000 at the start of the season in the Europa League qualifiers. It was almost like football's fashionable again in Milan. And there was so much excitement. And you're right, Inter, fantastic start to the season with Spalletti. He was getting the best out of players like Danilo Ambrosio. He's one of probably the best examples of that, all the way through the squad. You know, the tweaks of getting Boyar Valero and Vecino in midfield seemed to work well. And, you know, they scraped from the results, it's true. I think the early games against Fiorentina and Roma gave them a bit of an onus, and then the fixtures after that were favourable to give them that run. And they got a bit of momentum. Like Mancini's Inter back in the day, he's formed it on a very similar basis of getting the back quite solid and trying in any respect to get the ball through to Icardi, because we know he only needs a couple of yards to put the ball in the net. So that was, you know, that was kind of the key. But the problem in one respect is that Luciano Spalletti and Mancini have had many of the same problems, in the fact that both of them suffered in the creative second option in the team. Plan B, should we say, and just a lack of creativity. Spalletti had said to Gian Mario that, you know, you're going to be my trequartista, my creative hub. Now, it's arguable with the pace of today's game, especially with Italy increasing in the pace, the role of number 10 is dead. But putting that to one side, you've got to look at Icardi and think there wasn't, apart from Perisic and Kondrava, there wasn't a lot, you know, that the Inter were doing to supply him. But it was working, and they were getting through the games. I think the culmination of this was against Chievo, when they absolutely thrashed them 5-0. And that seemed to answer a lot of questions. Because like Maurizio Sarri's Napoli, when Higuain left, there's a gaping hole that you're dependent so much on one person. You need to get a collective group, almost a collective responsibility of players that need to come in and help Icardi score the goals. Perisic with the hat-trick that day, it looked like, you know, it was a peak of this into this season. Now, whether it's tiredness or it's complacency after that game, the Coppa Italia was a disaster, as you say, against Pordenone, but credit to Pordenone in that game. Juventus, of course, were going to cause them problems, but they got the draw. And then the disappointment against Udinese, and then I think Sassuolo after that, it started to look like that inevitable collapse. For me, with Inter at the moment, the biggest thing is how they've got, obviously, they've got Roma next. That's a huge game. But after that, they've got a lot of winnable fixtures in the sense of, without that, even a creative hub, team, not in this order, but teams like Spal, Crotone, Benevento, Genoa, they're all winnable games. So there's a potential for Inter to hopefully hit the ground running and get back to speed.
So you mentioned Candreva and Perisic. I mean, it really seemed like the game plan for a while was really to get the ball to either to try to set up Icardi. And in the January transfer window, Inter's really trying to give Spalletti more options. So this week we've been covering a lot on Di Marzio's site, Ausilio's attempts to sign Rafinha from Barcelona. Fairly optimistic that that deal will probably go through. They've also have been linked to former Chelsea midfielder Ramirez. Say they both come in to try to give some alternatives more in the middle. You mentioned Borja Valero, who's had his moments. He's I think he turned 33. Do you think those two would be able to bring enough more creativity to give Spalletti more options so Inter's a little bit less predictable?
In some respects, it will help Spalletti's headache of the fact that he feels the squad is too light. In some respects, you know, Ramirez is more obviously box to box like he was at Chelsea and can offer a lot, a very different dynamic in midfield. So, you know, maybe they can shift the ball. It doesn't have to always be a wide option. It could be a different way to, you know, to against the bigger teams. I think Ramirez can be quite good because he can carry the ball quickly, especially if it's on the counter. And the same with Rafinha in some ways as well. You know, both of those players can add maybe a different way to play against the big teams, perhaps. So that's interesting for Inter. Maybe then looking to draw, as they have been in a few of the big games, they can look to go and try and win those. The interesting thing, again, though, is just I don't see any of those two players particularly being the close support for Icardi. I mean, yeah, okay, Rafinha, you know, could do some damage on the wide positions. Could be a good option for Candreva. But, again, it's not that player who is also not only just going to look after Icardi in the sense of trying to read where he's going to go, read the runs that people aren't doing, but also chipping with goals. So it'll add depth, but whether it's going to help Inter change to a complete, to be able to actually have a completely different plan B is debatable in my opinion.
So a player we mentioned during the interview a few times is Mauro Icardi, who's really been very loyal to Inter. He has yet to play in the Champions League. He has an amazing scoring record in Serie A. So let's say that this season Inter fails once again to reach the Champions League. Do you think this would be the summer that he would actually leave? Because I have to say his profile has really risen recently. Now even people that don't follow Serie A regularly realize what a great striker he is.
Yeah, and you're spot on. I think that the world has stood up and noticed. And I think you have to with a player of this quality, especially with the ratios of the goals per game and the chances needed. If you ask me about this with any other player, whether it would be a Dybala, you know, I hesitate to say Andrea Silva, but any of the team's main top strikers, an Edin Dzeko, whatever that would be, even to the likes of someone like Harry Kane in England, for instance, would they be options for a big move, or especially now we're talking about Real Madrid? Potentially, yes. But Mario Icardi for me is just a little bit different. And the reason he's a bit more of an enigma is because, I mean, I'm very guilty of this, very guilty in the sense of every single footballer that we write about in the media or we look at, we always assume, being fans ourselves, that, you know, this is a game, we're only writing about this because we can't play it again, let's be honest. And so we always think that, players want to associate with the teams, they know the history of the team, they know about the fans, they know about the past cultures that have gone through the different, you know, you imagine that people at Inter would know about Grande Inter, they'd know about Trapattoni's Inter, but they don't. I mean, a lot of these guys play, football's a job. Adebayor's a great example. You turn up, you train, you don't really want to train. You play the game, you're good at it, you win the game, you score goals, you earn money. And Mario Icardi, for me, isn't even one of those players who's money hungry in that sense. Of course, he wants that lifestyle, don't get me wrong. But the fact is, in all of his interviews and the way he comes across, if you listen to the interviews from Robin Van Persie, for instance, is a great example. He probably knows, he could name you every single goal scorer, you know, goalkeeper or centre forward in the Russian second division. Knowledge is incredible of football. He lives and he breathes it. Mario Icardi doesn't. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong, he's no Garincha. He doesn't turn up 2 minutes before the game and not know who they're playing, but he doesn't care. He's one of these people who says, you know, he wants his family is important to him. Location is important to him. Obviously, money is, but it's not the be-all and end-all. And, you know, obviously, it's a tough way to look at it, because most people will see Mauro Icardi and think Instagram, Maxi Lopez, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Juan Donaro, obviously the agent, and you get this image of him. But realistically, Mauro Icardi seems to be quite a wholesome, believe it or not, person who cares about his family, and location's massive for him as well. So I'm not saying he wouldn't move to Real Madrid, but if the money was right and they renegotiate this this deal, would take out the release clause, which there's rumours they may do, if he was offered the decent money by Inter, I could see him staying.
Very, very interesting. And I agree. He's really kind of an against the grain type of guy. Things that we would apply to other players don't seem that important to him. Now, let's go to their Inter's crosstown rivals, Milan. So, of course, I'm guilty of this. I was very impressed with what they did in the summer. I definitely expected them to have a turnaround season. That has not been the case. So I wanted to get your take. Even after Milan spent over $200 million in the summer, signed a lot of players, do you still think Sousa is their best player? Because that's certainly, I'm in that camp now. So I wanted to see if even after these expenditures, if you still think they're the best, Sousa is their best player now.
Yeah, arguably. It's quite an interesting one, because if you look at the money they spent, you know, they've spent a lot. I was excited. I actually went over to Milan just to watch them against Udinese, because I was waiting to see this team explode. And, you know, and they disappointed. The atmosphere was incredible. The Milan fans were back, and it was fantastic to see. But even that performance was so nervy. Sousa is, for me, the best performing player at the moment in this team. But then the biggest problem is that word team. Milan aren't playing as a team at all. They're just a bunch of expensive individuals who are equally, you know, or if not variously talented, all to a very high level. You know, from Andre Silva right to the squad to Leo Bonucci, who we all know he's fantastically talented. Are they working together at the moment? No, not at all. And this is endemic with where they are at the moment as a club. They've not performed at all to the levels that fans wanted and expected, perhaps. And it's a lesson again that, you know, you can throw money at things, it doesn't always work. Sousa is an incredible talent. And, you know, for me, he's one of those players who carried on from where he left off last season. I think the credit needs to go to him, because he's one of those players almost like if you look at Malcolm now in France in Bordeaux, reminds me a little bit of the way, not in comparison to player, but just in the fact that even in a poor season, there's one player who continues to perform and continues to almost try and drag them out of the mud. And that's what Sousa is doing to me. So he's not the most talented player in that team, but he's certainly the best performer.
Very interesting. So another player that's really impressed me is their former Primavera player, Cutrone. Now, Milan invested heavily in the summer in Andre Silva and Kalinic, but I actually think Cutrone has probably been their best forward this season. Now, do you think his ceiling, because right now I would say his best quality are his grinta and determination, do you think his ceiling is maybe being like someone like Lapadula, or if we want to go on the high end, someone like Mandzukic, or do you think with time he could develop more talent and ball skills and maybe become a different type of striker and the type of player to lead Milan's line in the future?
It's a really good question, because it's hard to pinpoint him. It's hard to compare him. He's certainly been the most effective forward for them this season. I mean, Andre Silva, 6 goals in Europa League, 0 in Serie A so far, still obviously adjusting to the league. And, you know, okay, he's young. But so is Crotone at 20. You know, it's he's been fantastic since he came in. People expecting Kalinic as well to hit the ground running, and I think he's only got 4 now. Again, you know, that's a lack of supply but again, he's been off form as well. He's a sort of player you would expect to at least pick up 10, 15 goals in a team like Milan, but always maybe not leading the line. Crotone, I can see why he endears himself to the fans, because, you know, the boys from Como up the road. 35 minutes on the train, so he knows Milan like anyone else. He's been at the Primavera since he's 8, and you know he's played at every level. I think what's fascinating for this point is not only is Cotrone, like you say, plays with a lot of determination and industry. I think the fans at the moment, especially with Gattuso being in charge at the moment, sort of associate the two as that's what they need to get out of this situation. But he's also a reminder that, you know, the season before, Montella, because of the previous ownership, had almost had been forced, in a sense, to dip into the Primavera to start bringing some players like these. Cattoni, I think he only got one game at the end of May. People like Locatelli and start bringing more youthful players through. Obviously, everyone knows about Donnarumma as well. And to bring these players through and to thrust them in. And these players perform, and it shows that these guys at that age can do a job in Serie A. And when you look around and you look at Atalanta, it's another example of this can work. Inter are terrible with a great youth system that's not used. And this identity that Montella had accidentally fallen upon, almost at that point, you know, had gave Milan an identity, in a sense. And Cattuso, I think the fans associate with him as well. And, you know, yeah, he's all about determination. He is about industry and the will to win because of he's a fan of the club. But he is talented and he can get goals. But he's a strange forward to compare to. And I know it's always our want to compare to other players. But, you know, he's one of these players that, at the moment, when you look at him, you could say easily he could get 10-plus goals a season. And in Serie A, for a 20-year-old, I mean, even today when the game's more open, yeah, he can develop. He's got a lot of room to develop. And, okay, he might not be he might not be Milan's Mauro Icardi, but he can certainly be a really useful asset.
Very interesting answer. So we mentioned how much Milan spent in the summer. We talked about some of the players, Andre Silva and Kalinic. I would also lump in this group, Kolarov and Bilia. Kolarov's had his moments recently, but I think him and Bilia especially were supposed to bring quality to Milan's midfield. Have failed. I would say Montolivo and Bonaventura have been playing better than them. So if you were Milan and you look at these four players, Andre Silva, Kolarov, Bilia, and Kalinic, if you had an opportunity to cut your losses, get a comparable offer to what Milan spent in the summer, would you let them go or would you try to give them the rest of the season under Gattuso, who's slowly getting his feet wet as the manager of the senior team?
In a different situation, you know, you could argue the fact that you could let Bilia, Kalinic maybe go and look some replacements. Andre Silva can still come good. I mean, 22, I think he's, you know, I mean, well, for Milan, you'd hope he'd come good. I mean, he got 20 goals at Porto in all competitions the season before, nothing really more than that. But you can tell from the Europa League performances that there's a player adapting to a league. Canaloglu as well, yeah, right, he has all these moments, and I think that he could become a real asset to the team. At the moment, with Milan and FFP, I mean, they've already said they're not spending any money in the transfer window. I don't think they're going to get enough for Bilic or Kalinic to buy a player of the equivalent, you know, to make them settle, get into the squad, get into the routine. I think they need stability. I think Gattuso needs to try and find his first 11, not make the mistakes that Montella was making and keep messing with the lineup and find that solid 11. And, you know, these players will slowly, hopefully, adapt for Milan. At the end of the day, I mean, you'll know more than me that there's a lot going on with Milan and FFP. And, you know, we've already had seen an issue where their plan's already been rejected. And even their ownership could be at question, you know, by the end of the season. Well, I think it's by October, is it, where there's a possibility of hedge funds and all sorts maybe looking into the ownership of that. So at the moment, I don't think Milan, they have to balance the books, but the two players, Kalinic and Bilia, they're not going to make any huge moves to do that by letting those guys go.
Very interesting. So now let's talk about what is now probably a two-horse race to win the Scudetto. So let's start with Napoli. I was very impressed that even after their home loss against Juve de San Paolo, I was worried that they would just fall apart after that. They've been able to get back on track. Do you think they can hold on and win their first Scudetto since the 1980s, and maybe give a reason to our listeners why Napoli should be optimistic and one reason why they should be concerned?
Well, I think that Napoli, if they do win the Scudetto, I think we should all go to Naples because that party is going to be incredible. you know, listen, if they can repeat the feats of Maradona and Careca, I mean, it will be incredible. But they have got a realistic chance. It's not just nostalgia talking. I mean, you know, at the beginning of the season in Europe, okay, we can talk about Manchester City maybe, but Napoli, for me, have played some of the most it's not just even Cavalier football. It was absolutely fantastic. You know, Hamsik, Insigne, Callejon. It's just, the list is endless. Players who performed this season. And under Sarri, you know, he's worked hard with this group. And it is a group. And when we were talking about Inter before, you know, when they lost Higuain, they had a massive Higuain-shaped hole in up front for them. Excuse the pun with Higuain there. But it's the point being is that they had to suddenly then find the goals. And everybody stepped up. Even, like, you know, when you look through that squad, it's Insigne scoring, Hamsik scoring, Callejon, Mertens, of course, is the biggest example. And so they can miss a couple of players. Now, okay, I think they've actually got a bit of strength in depth, but Sarri doesn't trust the depth. So that's probably a bit of the problem. That's probably this window, I would say, for Napoli fans. They don't strengthen, not because they haven't got the players, but they don't strengthen to the players that Sarri's going to trust. That could be a little bit of the downfall. And the other problem is as well, they need to write off the Europa League, because I don't think that Napoli is strong enough to, or experienced enough to compete on all fronts like Juventus are. You know, I mean, it's going to be very difficult. The biggest plus point for Napoli fans, though, is, you know, yes, you're right that it was impressive that Napoli came back after the defeat to Juventus, but they've learned to play a completely different way as well. And they've learned that they can actually hold up and nick goals and win ugly, almost. And I know it's a cliche, but they've done that. And considering the way that they were playing, and now they've hit a bit of a bump and they're still winning games. So I think there's a lot of optimism about Napoli at the moment, but it'd be interesting with the transfer window.
Absolutely. So now let's talk about the defending champions. I would say up until 5-6 weeks ago, they clearly missed Bonucci. Granted, Bonucci didn't have the impact at Milan that many expected, but this doesn't change the fact that Juve's defense for a while really struggled. After the match against Sampdoria, when they conceded 3 goals, Allegri said he knew how to fix it. Many thought it was just something he was saying, but he backed it up. And I think the main reason has been Mehdi Benatia's resurgence. In his first season at Juve, he really struggled. Some even wondered why Juve used the option to buy him from Bayern, especially because they had Rugani. But Benatia's been absolutely sensational in the past 5-6 weeks. Looks like the player he was at Roma and Udinese. So let's assume that Benatia is going to keep this up, which is a fairly big if considering his injury concern. But let's say he keeps playing this way. Do you think this Juve has the potential to be better than the two teams that went to the Champions League finals in recent years?
In a short word, yes. And the reason being is, listen, at the start of the season, we all know what Juve are going to do. You know, they're so good in just shedding their skin and starting again, in the sense of whether it's Pirlo, or it's Tevez, it's Pogba, doesn't matter. You know, they can lose players, they take players like Pjanic, Benatia off their competitors, Higuain from Napoli maybe, and then they come back again and they regenerate, and they just keep regenerating. Now, I think, you know, with Allegri, I think it was, we sort of got in that idea that, yeah, they're going to keep doing this, and as long as they had that back line of Chiellini, Azagli, Bonucci, Buffon, then, you know, that was the mainstay of it. This season, I was guilty of this, when you looked at it and you thought, hold on a second, you know, how many games are these guys going to play? Bonucci's gone. Oh, there's a hole. You know, and Benatia, how's he going to adapt? And then the results did falter at certain times. And for the first time, and especially with Inter and Napoli, everyone's thinking, you know, this is a Scudetto race. This is going to be the first time for a while that we're really going to see something. And in the back of your mind, it's Juventus will come back. But then you're thinking, because of the two, well, the Champions League defeats, the recent ones especially, you're thinking, if they've got one eye on the Champions League, maybe they're just too focused on it now. It's become more of an obsession, which in a sense it is. But they've won the league normally in second gear. Can they do it this time? The interesting thing is, with Juventus, you can't write them off about the fact of how pragmatic they are and how good Allegri is as a coach as well, to be able to see the holes in the squad and where it is. And I think the biggest fear for Serie A is that not only this season have they tinkered with elements of the squad, and Dybala's been in and out, Higuain, is he going to, is he not, you know, how's he going to perform, but also it's the back line broke up, Bonucci going to Milan, and for the first time you saw Benatia come in and start to perform, and it's showing that actually, hold on, this is more of a, Juventus doesn't have to exist just on that back line. But for me, the biggest point of that is, obviously, Gigi Buffon, it doesn't matter what club you support in Europe, in the world, you know Buffon, and so you automatically think that he's the mainstay. But for me, one of the best moves that Allegri has made and the staff at Juventus was signing Wojciech Szczesny from Roma. Mm-hmm. Szczesny at Arsenal was always, you know, I've watched him a lot at Arsenal, and was always one of the most talented goalkeepers I thought I'd seen in agility, reaction, athleticism, passing. But he was hot-headed, and he wasn't coached. And when he went to Roma, you know, credit to the staff and the goalkeeping staff there, that they transformed him into, they made him tactically aware. You know, they made him when to go, not to go. They explained, almost made him feel his surroundings and understand them more. And that, he was one of the best goalkeepers in Europe for Roma. How he went for the price he went. And Juventus picked him up, and now it's arguable, and I know this sounds crazy, but I would argue that does Buffon deserve to? I mean, you've got to play Buffon because yeah. Buffon in some respects, but on current form, Wojciech Szczesny seems an absolute shoo-in. There's not even a question that it looks like an even issue that he's going to replace Buffon, which is a massive statement.
It is.
In the sense of, with, you know, it's Buffon, for God's sake. But Szczesny himself, is the way his game's come on, the levels of maturity, and also his character as well, I think it's an incredible addition. So, you know, Juve don't exist always on that old bat line. So the rest of Serie A probably in a bit of trouble now.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think it was very smart for Juve to bring him in for Szczesny to be with Buffon one season. He's into the role. I have to say he's convinced a lot of Juventini in recent weeks. I think up until 2 months ago, all of them would have loved to have Donnarumma instead, but it's hard to argue against what you're saying. So aside from Szczesny, any other Serie A players that have really impressed you this season?
Yeah, a lot, but just briefly, staying on the goalkeeping situation, I mean, we're talking about the fact that Roma lost a great goalkeeper in Szczesny. And for him to go over to Juve, you know, I watched Alisson quite a bit in Europe. And, you know, he didn't, again, another goalkeeper with all the assets, all the physical, you know, assets to be a top keeper. But he looked poor in Europe. And decision-making, again, distribution looks not hot all the time with him. And again, the Roma goalkeeper staff, his statistics, I think, are now, when you look at the amount of shots he had against him, the amount of crosses he's taken, his statistics are incredible. And, you know, he, to me, could be, I think in the future, we're going to be looking at Alisson and Szczesny as the two main goalkeepers in Serie A in the coming years. And I think that's credit to the goalkeeper staff again at Roma. Also, I think the other big one for me, we're talking about defending before with Inter, and you know the fact that the back line was shored up. I think one of the biggest things is when you look at, you know, they've had always over the recent seasons, they've always had Miranda. And Miranda's been excellent for them because not only can he control a game, he controls the back line, but Inter have had talented defenders like Murillo, Juan Jesus, even Andrea Nocchia to an extent, who can all hold their line and play on individually, focus on themselves. But the first thing they can't do is control what's around them. And the second thing they certainly can't do is play their own game at the top level and control what's around them. And you've seen a lot of times that people like Murillo have been looking to Miranda for advice, for help, for reassurance. Miranda plays well. Inter played well in a lot of games. But Milan Skriniar, obviously for the money he came over from Sampdoria, has just hit the ground running. And he's been potentially one of the best defenders in Serie A, and he's one of those players who doesn't need Miranda. You know, he can play with or without, and he's been exceptional. So those are my main two. I think, okay, it's a bit defensive and a bit left field, but absolutely incredible, both of them.
Excellent choices. So I want to close on this. I'm a huge fan of your website, Gentleman Ultra. You guys went through a recent revamping. You guys are back online. There's some great content there. I really enjoyed the article on Balotelli there, but there's so much great content. What I love about the site is there's no, you know, clickbaiting type of stuff. You guys really showed the passion and the culture that makes Italian football so unique and special. You have a great squad of writers. So tell us a little bit what we can expect on a Gentleman Ultra this year.
No, I appreciate that. It's down to the, I just like to say first and foremost with the site and the revamp, it'd be wrong for me to take credit because, you know, Luca Hodges-Ramon has done an incredible job with Blair Newman, Neil Morris, Nemec Gates. Matt Santangelo has been involved as well. So it's a creation that just keeps growing and growing. This was always seen to be looking at Italian football through originally English eyes, and then it was European and global eyes, really, so that it can appeal to everyone. So it doesn't matter if, you know, Italian football for you and your memories were, like for me, you know, watching Italia 90, or, you know, if it's from across the pond watching from, you know, a bar watching Milan bar or whatever it might be, or being at the stadiums. And it's just an idea that, you know, we're trying to just increase the idea that Italian football means something different to everyone. So that, yes, there's a nostalgic element to it. Can look at it with rose-tinted glasses. There's also a very big realism, a quite dark underbelly to it as well. So the biggest thing is this year with the articles, we're going to become more varied. We're going to really dig back into the past to get some really, really different stories that people haven't heard, because, you know, there's plenty of sites that do news better than we do, and tactical columns in the sense of, you know, we've got some of the tactical stuff as well from some good writers, but we've got a lot there that's... we're trying to do what people don't do, because there's better people who have got more time, more energy, more resource to do the here and now, you know, and they all do fantastic jobs. We're just trying to do something really different, and we'll continue to do that. And hopefully the site, you know, will grow in the sense of writers and obviously with a podcast at some point. One of the things we are doing as well is you know, I've got to point out, none of our writers are paid, and that's because we don't really advertise on the site. I know it sounds a bit strange, but it is a labour of love in some respects. And one of the things that we don't have is deadlines. So every time you read an article on there, all our writers may take 3, 4, 5 weeks over this. We don't push for them. And now we've got a team of people who take a lot of time, putting a lot of effort, and it's all off their own back. So the site's something I started, but it's a credit to everyone who's still writing to it for what it is now.
There's certainly great content on your site, just like the great content you brought us today. So, Richard, I can't thank you enough for joining us today on Cultural Analytics, and I look forward to chatting with you again in 2018.
Definitely. Thanks a lot, guys. Can't wait.